a name change, and I would say that's a significant name change to from Ecora Resources to Ecora Royalties. Tell me a little bit about that, the process, the thought process on that, and why.
Yeah, it's a couple letters, not a huge change in the scheme of things, but in some ways better aligns the name with the core areas of our business, which is royalty and streaming investing. It's a little bit different from many royalty companies that some of your audience may be familiar with by virtue of the fact that our strategy is to position the portfolio in critical minerals and in particular copper. And base metals, for example, represents 80% of our portfolio by estimated net asset value and more than 50% now site copper. So the balance rounded out by uranium, rare earths, some other critical minerals, and a legacy exposure to met coal, which is running off. So when we met last summer, Andy, I think we were at this really interesting inflection point where we were starting to see a really strong ramp up from the next phase of this business, in other words, the critical minerals royalties, and the wind down, albeit still some great strong cash flows from the legacy steelmaking coal or met coal royalty.
Mark Bishop LaFleche, Ecora Royalties, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
Hi, Andy. Great to be back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So you guys have just had a name change, and I would say that's a significant name change to from Ecora Resources to Ecora Royalties. Tell me a little bit about that, the process, the thought process on that, and why.
Yeah, it's a couple letters, not a huge change in the scheme of things, but in some ways better aligns the name with the core areas of our business, which is royalty and streaming investing. I think for folks who understand the story, changes nothing really. Potentially for folks who are new to the company, a much faster way to understand what it is we're all about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And to all my viewers and listeners, I met Mark last summer at a conference, at Rick Rule's conference. And I had a list of 10, and I will say that Ecora Resources at the time, now Ecora Royalties, was my number one company. And I think I told you that at the entire conference. I just loved the model, and I really loved exactly what you guys are in, specifically copper, but I liked all the other critical minerals, the portfolio, if you would. So just give me a 30,000 foot view to all of our viewers and listeners that are not familiar with you. Tell us about really your portfolio just briefly, and just the advantage of a royalty company.
Yeah, well, in a nutshell, Ecora is a little bit different from many royalty companies that some of your audience may be familiar with by virtue of the fact that our strategy is to position the portfolio in critical minerals and in particular copper. And base metals, for example, represents 80% of our portfolio by estimated net asset value and more than 50% now site copper. So the balance rounded out by uranium, rare earths, some other critical minerals, and a legacy exposure to met coal, which is running off. So when we met last summer, Andy, I think we were at this really interesting inflection point where we were starting to see a really strong ramp up from the next phase of this business, in other words, the critical minerals royalties, and the wind down, albeit still some great strong cash flows from the legacy steelmaking coal or met coal royalty. In some ways last year, I think when I look back on 2025, in my mind, 2025, I think, stands as an inflection point, really. And I think the question that we've discussed a few times over the course of last year was Ecora being recognized for what it was, a fast-growing critical minerals royalty, as opposed to, or recognized for what it is, rather, as opposed to what it was historically, which was a way to get steelmaking coal exposure, which is quite different and not nearly as exciting, I think, when you look at the growth that exists in our critical minerals basket. The royalty model itself, I mean, what's not to like? As a royalty company, it's a way for an investor to get relatively diversified exposure to an underlying portfolio of royalties. And the royalties, of course, have the benefit of being a percentage of revenue. And therefore, what you don't have is direct operating risk. not directly exposed to the capital costs or maintenance costs of building a mine or running a mine. And over the long term, of course, as you continue to grow and diversify your asset base, it's generally a way to get exposure to the price of a commodity. And with at Ecora, anyways, with some really strong counterparties and underlying assets and royalties, and benefit if you believe that commodity even prices in time will trend up. So that's the royalty model. I think we've discussed the royalty model in detail in the past together. So there's certainly other videos of us speaking on this topic. So I won't belabor your audience with a repeat, but that's definitely out there just to say if someone is interested to have a look at some of the last chats Andy, you and I have done, and there's a lot more detail.
To all my viewers and listeners, I really advise you to look at those last chats. Really, when I started having Mark on, if I'm not mistaken, in later August or September, we've dropped three different interviews. I believe three different interviews. Check those out. I'll put those in the link in the show note, a link to those in the show notes as well, so you can do your own due diligence and research. Also, full disclosure, I am a very happy investor. Any Ecora royalties, as well as they are a sponsor of the channel. So, just full disclosure on that. Mark, this might put everything, this is what did it for me. Well, a lot of things did it, but talk a little bit about, or just comment a little bit about how many employees do you have and how much cash are you generating?
Yeah, well, that's certainly one aspect of the royalty model, which
That's
is
just
very.
one. I agree, but go ahead.
So this business today has, call it 11 or 12 employees. Our enterprise value today is just over 500 million, and with this level of staffing, we could run a royalty portfolio that's probably double the size, right? And so what you have here is a business model that maintains over time really low and really low cost structure. In other words, what you don't have relative to a mining company, of course, is the operating cost that exists in running a mine. I mean, you have to have all your staff on site, head office. It's a much more complicated affair. So the royalty company model, and this applies not just to Ecora, but any royalty company, is one that's generally characterized by sort of leanness, cost discipline at Ecora certainly. And as we grow, you have a lot of torque and leverage to that growth, given the fairly static operating cost profile.
Yeah. Speaking of torque and leverage, you guys have you're at 52-week highs. As I checked this morning, and today is January 19th at 9:22 Eastern Standard Time. I said good afternoon to you because you're in London. But talk to me about just really about why it's been a great year, if you would, looking in the rearview mirror. But why should people be excited about you looking forward? Start with the first quarter and take me through to the year. Just what do you got hitting and why investors should really be paying attention to you?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things to focus on when you look at the year ahead. And it won't surprise you, Andy, that when we think about 2026, it's a continuation of a lot of the themes or topics or developments that carry forward from last year into this current year. And on that note, last year we saw really strong volume growth at Voisey's Bay. We saw strong growth at Mimbula over the course of the year. And that's expected to carry forward into this year. Those are two base metals assets. We've seen really strong price tailwinds sort of kick off over the course of last year in coal, copper, cobalt, nickel, uranium has been strong, other commodities to which we have exposure, not to forget rare earths, where we've seen some fairly explosive price action, where we have a rare earths royalty exposure as well. That certainly probably is a factor. And notwithstanding those two things, when you think about this year, this portfolio has. Is positioned to really benefit, I think, from the strong price back and price from the price for the price environment, because the next wave of growth generally is likely to come much faster, right? If commodity prices are strong, and that next wave of growth in our portfolio comes from assets like brownfield expansion. So, in other words, increasing the production capacity from assets that are already in production, and that potentially ex includes a copper royalty we have over a mine called Mantos Blancos that's owned by Capstone Copper. So that a phase two expansion study detailing the possibility of further expanding production is expected later in the year. And then the greenfield development assets. And that's really where it gets interesting. And that's where, in aggregate, you start to see some exceptionally transformational growth in our portfolio. And over the course of this decade, potentially our revenue profile. Assets like Santo Domingo, a development project, really at the front end of development, potentially facing a final investment decision with Capstone later this year. We shall see. West Musgrave project. This is an asset that actually was already in construction, and construction was paused as a result of a fairly weak nickel environment. You've seen nickel prices change pretty dramatically in the past few weeks as a result of signaling direct and indirect from the Indonesian government that they would look to manage the supply of nickel to the market. And this asset, anyways, West Musgrave at spot prices is actually more of a copper mine than a nickel mine, anyways. So BHP has indicated the possibility of that asset being sold. That process is ongoing, so we'll have to wait and see. But that I keep in mind that West Musgrave is something like 26% built, plus or minus, fully permitted in Australia, a couple of years from cash flow. And suffice to say, there just aren't that many assets of that characteristics in the world today. So that's certainly one to watch. Beyond that, we expect a feasibility study at Phalaborwa, the rare earth project I mentioned earlier. Nifty, an asset over which we have a royalty in Australia, has just restarted production on an oxide project. The company is looking to do a sulfide copper project thereafter, and more. If you'll indulge me for a second, Andy, just to speak
Please.
of one that's a little bit more long dated, but incredibly interesting to Ecora, and that's Paterson Corridor East. This is a exceptional uranium discovery owned by NexGen, over which we have a royalty. And over 2025, we saw quite a lot of delineation drilling, where you see a lot of continuity to that resource size, excellent, spectacular grades. That's one longer dated, certainly not in this decade, but when the context of our portfolio in time can prove to be, just a truly spectacular royalty. So as and when more information comes on any of the items I just mentioned, and I've sort of skipped over some the entirety of the list here, but there's a lot to be excited about and a lot to watch. On the point of our equity has traded nicely in the last, let's call it 12 months, I think, just up a little.
Yeah, I will say that, not Mark, but yeah, as a shareholder, go ahead. I'm gushing.
Yeah, so that's wonderful to see. I mean, we always saw a lot of value in Ecora. And Andy, one of the things you and I spoke about on your show was the value opportunity that existed at Ecora. And the opportunity, as it was when we first spoke last year, was to acquire Ecora shares for less than the value of the producing asset base, which appeared to be just an incredible value entry point. And yes, it's true, the share price has moved, but the opportunity today, if you factor in rising commodity prices, unless you assume that the value of our producing assets has increased since then, the equity is priced not too far ahead of our producing asset basis. And there's still a lot of things in this portfolio that an investor today can get for free by buying Ecora shares. We're still trading at a very large discount to estimated net asset value. So despite the positive momentum, it suggests that if some of these catalysts materialize, there's room for continued positive price action and then the short, medium, and long term.
Yeah, let me talk to my viewers and listeners here real briefly. And Mark, you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong. This is still a deep value play relative to where commodity prices are currently, as well as we can even project out, or you can project out yourself to viewers and listeners, where do you think these commodity prices in the portfolio will be over the next, you can even map it out over the next decade. And then just really relative also to what is coming on, what royalties not only do they have in production, but what is coming on. And to summarize that too, it's really this perfect mix, Mark. It's like what I look for in a royalty company, what's hitting, what's going to hit over the next year, what's it gonna have, and what's the longer term growth. And you have this great portfolio of you have cash flow coming in now. Again, you got a great tailwind, if you would, of great copper prices, if you would. But then you have brownfields projects. Again, those are low risk projects that are coming online this, I'll just say it this year, as you just mapped it out, if you would. But then what's really generational changing, company changing, stock changing, and even investor portfolio changing is really the greenfield potential of some of these assets. Did I summarize that all correctly?
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess the other point to note that you don't really see it if you look at the revenue line, right? And maybe that's why the stock has been a bit misunderstood, is a lot of the asset value we have, for example, in copper is not yet generating income. And when, you
I'm
think
glad you
about,
said that. Go ahead.
yeah, so, last year, right around this time, the long-term price for copper, as estimated by research analysts, was around $4. And today that's around 460. Spot copper today is 580.
Right.
But what we're seeing is we've seen research analysts' price forecasts kind of catch up to spot. And generally, price forecasts tend to lag either on the way up or on the way down.
Correct.
But at its core, if you kind of step back from sort of the nitty-gritty, the bottom line is that in these in critical minerals, particularly those tied to electrification or robotics, if you zoom out 5 years, 10 years, the reality is the world supply today is just insufficient to meet demand expectations. And so usually what we've seen in the past, say, 1,000 years over time is prices increasing to levels that incentivize new supply. The other dynamic you see today in the world that really manifested last year, that actually, Andy, I would expect we'll see a lot more of 2026, is a geopolitical angle to critical minerals and a desire from, from state actors to take more tangible action to position their economies to have direct access to the underlying critical minerals and the flow of critical minerals without supply chains that kind of overlap different axes or different verticals in the geopolitical today. Your cobalt, for example, a commodity where the 70% of supply was in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the government last year decided to take action, seeing cobalt prices around 50-year lows in real terms, with 70% of the supply coming from the DRC, to introduce export quotas. And thus, you've seen the cobalt price last year go from 13 last year around this time, $13 per pound, to today for alloy grade, $28 per pound. And that playbook seems to be one that's being adopted in Indonesia now, where Indonesia is estimated to produce on 2024-25 numbers, somewhere in the order of 60-ish percent of world supply of nickel. And they've, as I mentioned earlier, the government officials have indicated an objective of reducing supply to the market. And this all kind of makes sense if you think that OPEC is around 40% of world supply, right? So if you're a government and you're dominating supply of minerals, why would you not look to maximize value for the benefit of your citizens? So I think we'll see sort of more in that vein. But I also think on the copper side, what's going to be more clear is that, this is an industry that's seen really low levels of investment in new capacity on historical sort of trend levels. And you're entering a multi-decade period where, some folks go as far as to say to meet sort of staying in the same place, ignoring energy transition and all that, a need to produce more than in the next 20 years we've produced in the collective history of humanity. So even if you have half of that, that should be a pretty good copper market.
Take me through what you can talk about really through the next dial it down through the next quarter maybe or even 4 months. Do you have news that you can talk about? What should investors be paying attention to over the next quarter with you guys?
Yeah, I think one thing to watch, and it's a continuation on 2025 actually, and I think it's just have a look at the ramp up and keep an eye on the ramp up and the growth from our base metals assets, right? And that's really been the story about Ecora. When the old legacy steelmaking coal royalty, that royalty is not done yet. We still expect some level of cash flow from that royalty this year, and then less than the a sort of tail to the end of the decade. But the ramp up in the cash flows from everything else runs for decades, right? And what you're talking about is income profiles from royalties that run decades instead of years from the steelmaking coal royalties. So that's definitely something to watch, and that volume growth. And then it's really the key sort of development milestones for some of the assets I've mentioned earlier, because once we get a bit more visibility on those timelines, a bit more certainty on, when you might be able to put a pin on what year you expect first income to come from. I think that's when you see some of those royalties really be priced in and increasingly closer to full value in the share price. In some instances, you could say that certain royalties are priced in at zero, or others you could argue are priced in at really big discounts given potential uncertainty. So that's certainly something to watch over the course of this year, particularly if metal prices stay strong. Because I'm repeating myself a little bit, but it is an important point. In the backdrop of strong commodity prices, I think that really increases the likelihood that these projects come online faster than might otherwise be the case if commodity prices aren't as strong.
Got it. Let me talk to my listeners here real quick. This is me speaking. This is not Mark or his opinion. He had didn't know I was going to say this, but just my opinion as an investor. Why I really love Ecora Royalties is that there is a lot of optionality here. So if you're looking at it from an investor standpoint, okay, you have these royalties hitting, you have a lot of cash flow coming in, you have potential for a lot more cash flow to come in, not only for the short term, next 3 to 6 months and through the year, but longer term, but also that because of the value of the share price, as well as the assets that they have, in my mind, there's a lot can happen with that. When I met Mark, it's like, wow, there's a lot of option, a lot of deep value here, undervalue, and a lot of cash flow that's coming. And we're already seeing that. That's what we've seen in the stock price in the last 6 months. Mark, give me your website, give me your tickers and exchanges that you're traded on so people can buy you and participate if they do so choose.
Yeah, so if you're looking for more information about this business website, www.ecoraroyalties.com. We trade on the London Stock Exchange. The ticker is ECOR. The TSX ticker is ECOR. And we also trade, we're on the OTCQX platform if you're in the United States and you prefer to settle in day business hours in the United States. The ticker there is ECRAF. And if you have any questions about Ecora, where we've been, where we're going, feel free to reach out. The correct email address would be ir@ecoraroyalties.com.
We'll put all of this in the show notes. Thank you so much, Mark. Love to get you on. Hopefully, in the next 30 days or so, get an update and just have these kind of conversations.
Sounds great. Speak soon, Andy.
Take care.
Bye.